Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
And welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, Walmart may be the United States' biggest pirate broadcaster. That and the FCC seems to be playing favorites when it comes to their local media ownership forums. What the heck is going on? Joining me once again, John Anderson from DIYmedia.net and Free Press's Media Minutes. To help sort it all out, you'll definitely want to stay tuned. Well, thanks again for joining me, John, here.
It's always a pleasure.
Give me a hand. And actually, I really do need a hand.
You do.
I'm gonna pull back the fourth wall on the show today and explain to people what it means sometimes to be an independent radio producer. On the one hand, actually, this is the beginning of Women's History Month as we go to air here, as we record the program. It's March 2nd, and I had planned to do some programming about Women's History Month, and every single interview I'd arranged so far has not come through.
Right.
And I even, someone who, a good friend, was not able to do this. I asked her last minute, though, and she'll be on next week to do some talking here. And then I broke my wrist 2 days ago,
which is partially my fault,
playing racquetball with this guy. except we could blame you if you would like smack me with the racket or push me over.
No, just
or
a
hit
high
me.
Bloop. You know,
but really, it was just my own inability to have any grace.
It's the first time I've actually been in the presence of a bone being broken, and I was hoping for more like snap
what,
action.
I mean,
you've
never been to WrestleMania?
No, I haven't, and. It's an experience I'll never forget.
And so I fell backwards on top of my right hand, holding my racket, which then twisted in interesting directions, breaking it. Which is now, being that I am a righty, making life kind of difficult.
You're now
all
a
around.
Lefty.
I am now a lefty, not by choice, but by force. And so, John, I guess feeling a little guilty.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm atoning for my sins.
To be in the presence of such a heinous injury off air. It's helped me out today so we can bring you a program. And I think it'll be interesting anyway. I always get good feedback when you're on.
That's great.
So much better feedback than when I do like 20 minutes cut out of a Senate Commerce Committee hearing.
Right. Well, you know, I'm sorry I'm not a girl. You know,
we'll make up for that later.
Okay.
And we really do have some, I hope to have some really good programming planned for Women's History Month here. So you'll want to stay tuned. But I'm not going to preview any of it till I actually have it written
on
the calendar.
Know what's going on, right.
Yeah, that is the problem with doing your own booking and everything else. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this news about Walmart, you just dropped to me when you walked into the studio today.
Yeah.
Here.
So the FCC puts out this really wonderful document every day. It's called the Daily Digest. And it basically says all of the decisions that the FCC has come to over the course of the day before. It's a 5 day a week thing that they put out. And it's interesting because there's a lot of different stuff that the FCC does. And I was reading the Daily Digest from March 1st, actually, and it said Walmart Stores Inc. adopted consent decree. And so I clicked on the document to actually read it, and I discovered that in effect, Walmart Stores Inc. has been involved in unlicensed operation of radio apparatus. They're pirates, in effect. I haven't found all the details yet, but it involves ground stations for satellite communications that Walmart uses. And there's two primary ways that Walmart uses satellite communications to run its business. The first one is through inventory and transaction control. So a store manager will essentially put into a database. What kind of, do they have enough toilet paper? Are they running out of toilet paper? That's beamed over a bird to headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas, I think is where they're located. And then from there, it's sent out to the warehouses to tell the trucks where to go and what to bring to each store. There's another thing that they use satellites for, and that is Walmart radio, which is the Muzak that's pumped in with the special sale announcements and things like that. And apparently Walmart had authorizations for, I think, three different ground stations to run satellite communications channels. And they actually implemented five. Apparently they just had not enough capacity or something. So they threw up a couple dishes, rented some transponders on a satellite, but didn't actually bother going to the FCC to get a license to actually use these communications channels. So after the fact, back in, I think, early 2006, Walmart filed what's called a special temporary authority application saying, okay, well, we've kind of already started doing this, and now we'd like you to rubber stamp it. And the FCC went, you know, that's not exactly what the process is supposed to work like. So the Enforcement Bureau opened up an investigation, and they started looking into Walmart's use of satellite communications, and they found Walmart was dead to rights wrong and shouldn't have done it. And they violated Section 301 of the Communications Act, which means all users of the airwaves under the auspices of FCC control must receive a license from the FCC, and Walmart didn't have one. And according to that, that's the same thing as if you or me were to throw up a pirate radio station, put it on the air, we would face the exact same charge, violation of Section 301. Well, Walmart doesn't want to be known as a pirate, so their lawyers got together with the FCC lawyers, and they essentially issued a consent decree. And the consent decree essentially says that Walmart will pay an undisclosed amount of money for doing what they did to the FCC, and they will put in a program, implement into place a program to basically make sure that they don't do it again.
You know, and I wonder if it wasn't just a couple of, you know, rogue engineers, or really just like no one, you know, someone who didn't know the legality said, oh, we've already got these stations, we need more, and never. You know, not so intentional from corporate headquarters so much as people who didn't know better went ahead and did this, and no one up the line ever did a double check on it.
Yeah, that, or, you know, I mean, maybe Walmart just doesn't respect the FCC's authority. This isn't the first time that large corporations have essentially decided to hell That's with true. Licensing, and we're just going to go ahead and do it and try to register.
Because there's all these other realms. I think a lot of people don't realize that licensing for use of the broadcast spectrum and the electromagnetic spectrum goes way beyond just simple broadcast.
Right,
goes way beyond AM, FM, and TV. And, you know, and Walmart uses satellite communications because it's actually very quick, and it's also it's private and closed.
Right.
It's actually much more secure than doing it over the internet.
Right.
And also, they started doing this before the internet was really built out as much as it was.
Yeah. And like I said, it's not the first time that there has been, you know, what I like to call corporate piracy. And sometimes it's something that I think happens out of ignorance. Sometimes it's something that just kind of happens out of hubris, for lack of a better word. I mean, just a couple of years ago, the FCC did a major sweep in the San Diego area of companies like furniture manufacturers and whatnot who had their sales and marketing and administrative offices located in San Diego, California, but they had their manufacturing facilities, their maquiladoras, located across the border in Tijuana, Mexico. And essentially what they would do to like let the factories know what the orders were that they had to make for the day is use a point-to-point microwave communications link to send inventory information back and forth and order information back and forth, all of which has to be licensed by the FCC. And none of these companies were actually doing it. So the FCC got tipped off that there were all these various manufacturing firms running all these unlicensed things. They went out, they measured them, and they got them dead to rights. And they were all fined $10,000 for unlicensed operation. Another good example of something that's kind of egregious and nationwide is Enron. Back in the Enron days, mm-hmm. when Enron was going around and buying up utility companies and energy exploration firms, not only were they buying up actual infrastructure, but they were also buying up licenses for two-way radio communication systems that utility crews use when they're
out in the
field.
Like you see in a when you take a cab.
Right. And of course, that's more of an administrative oversight. They acquired the company, they acquired the licenses, and then nobody bothered to keep up on reapplying for the licenses to keep them current. All of a sudden, the licenses have expired, and Enron's running all of these two-way unlicensed radio communication systems around the country. And they also went to the FCC and came up with a consent decree. Part of the thing I like about consent decrees is they also pretty much admit to no wrongdoing.
Right.
You know? And these are not options generally that the FCC will offer to someone who uses broadcast spectrum without a license.
Right. And we see these things happen more often with the Justice Department.
Right.
Who will reach agreements either in antitrust and other arenas. You also see it with the EPA. You also see with the DEA, with companies, you know, because in lieu of a protracted court battle where it's where neither side is really clear as to who will win and at what cost, the government gives a little bit and says, all right, you don't have to admit wrongdoing, but you'll pay us a good load of money. And in exchange, the companies walk away without the and consent decrees have happened with indecency, with Infinity CBS.
Right.
In a lot of different areas. And you know, I think it's for me in watching this, my viewpoint is always what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Right.
It's not that I'm celebrating the grand exercise of the FCC's authority so much as if the FCC is going to come down on a San Francisco Liberation Radio or going to come down on various other unlicensed FM operators around the country, and then they damn well better be coming down on the Walmarts of the world for whom obtaining licenses is really not pernicious. It's really not much of a speed bump for them in doing their business, nor is it a major cost to them.
Yeah.
If anyone ought to be able to get those licenses, Walmart should be
right.
It.
Piracy is piracy, though, folks. And I mean, if you're going to treat one pirate one way, you should treat them all that way.
Precisely.
But that's not the way it works when corporations are involved. So,
with lots of legal firepower, which, you know, even a community radio station like San Francisco Liberation Radio just barely has any access to.
Right.
And they're unusual in having any access to it at all.
Right.
You are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Minnell. I'm your host. And today I'm talking to John Anderson of DIYmedia.net and also producer of Free Press's Media Minutes, 5 minutes of media news from the intersection of media and democracy.
Which is really dangerous right now.
I think it'd be a little cleaned up by now.
Nah, it's still pretty dangerous.
Are you out there with the stop sign?
I got a whistle.
You got a whistle. You get
whistle
to wear the Dayglo green coat.
Yes, and white gloves.
Hat. Okay. He's out there. You can look. You can find out more about it, and you can listen to it at freepress.net/media minutes. Media Geek website is mediageek.net with the Media Geek blog, and you can get this program at radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments, send them along to me, paul@mediageek.net. So the FCC seem to be pulling some shenanigans. We're going to talk a lot about the FCC because, you know, they're kind of core here in the communications world. At their most recent forum, a hearing, actually, on the subject of media ownership, which went down a week ago.
Yes, the FCC is currently in the middle of holding 6 public hearings on the subject of media ownership as part of their rules review of various media ownership regulations. The third of these hearings was just held on February 23rd in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And usually the way these hearings work is the FCC gives maybe a week or two's notice that they're going to hold the hearing. And then a week or so before the hearing, they actually announce the time the hearing's going to start, who is going to appear, when the public testimony will be available, when the hearing's going to start, and how you can get involved. And usually the people that show up to these things are people that are pretty pissed off about the state of the media. They do not want to see more consolidation, and they make their feelings known. So at the previous two hearings, one, I can't even remember where they were.
One was in Austin, one was in Nashville.
Was that where they were? Okay.
No, Austin is wrong.
San Antonio?
San
Antonio? And that was back
Nashville.
In the Powell days.
Nashville
was
definitely
one of them. Anyway, they've been holding these hearings, and they're kind of trying to hold them around the country. And for the Harrisburg one, it was very interesting in that they did not announce where the hearing was going to be and when it was going to start until about 72 hours before the actual hearing was supposed to take place. And they scheduled it for a Friday at 8:30 in the morning. So, you know, it's like working stiffs have to take a day off work, essentially, to go to these things. Well, a lot of people did show up to this hearing. Unbeknownst to a lot of the people who did show up at the hearing, the FCC had actually opened up a special table at 7:30 in the morning for people to register to speak in the public testimony part of the hearing. And the testimony was strongly stacked with local broadcasters and any charity that has ever gotten free time on local broadcast stations. So like the anchors of all the TV stations in the Harrisburg and Central Pennsylvania area, news directors at the radio stations, managers of these stations showed up, camera people from these stations showed up. And then it was people like the vice chairman of the Red Cross, the major of the Salvation Army, someone who does public outreach for the public library, Toys for Tots, Coats for Kids. All these people showed up and they just went through this huge public hearing thing, and they were all saying the exact same thing, which is our media does a good job of providing local information, and it's helping us because they help us raise money and they give us all this free airtime, and therefore the media is not broken. Consolidation really wouldn't hurt us, because you can see they obviously care so much about what our local community is doing. And all of these other people who had actually, you know, like rented a bus from Philadelphia and drove, you know, a couple hours to get to the hearing and had to get up at 5 a.m. to get there, are kind of sitting there going, where the heck did all these people come from? And why are they all saying the same things? Interestingly enough, it appears there was some sort of communication. This has not been confirmed yet, but the suspicion is that there was some sort of communication from the chairman's office to local broadcasters and local media outlets in the Harrisburg area, effectively saying, you guys are getting your butts kicked in these previous public hearings. You need to come out and show that you're actually doing something that's in the public interest. And then what those broadcasters did is they contacted all the charities that they have done work for and said, okay, we have helped you. We have given you free airtime. We have donated our talent to appear at your fundraisers and things like that. Now it's time for you to help us. Here are some talking points about ways that we have helped the local community. If you'll come to this hearing and sign up and speak in our favor, we would greatly appreciate it. And of course, pretty much everybody did. So on one side, you had you know, your typical disgruntled public folks who weren't, you know, took the day off work to be there and really had concerns. And then on the other side, you had all these people either from the media or with attachments to the media on a quasi-business relationship stance, who were being paid to be there, who were representing organizations in the capacity of their employment, basically reading off these lists of talking points. Every single broadcaster that showed up there had a National Association of Broadcasters lapel pin on their shirt. And the same day as the public hearing, the vice president of the NAB wrote a commentary in Broadcasting and Cable saying, boy, these hearings are really lopsided. All of these disgruntled members of the public show up and they're showing up from all over. Like, they're not just coming from Harrisburg. They're coming from Philly and Pittsburgh. And that's just not fair. The FCC should actually restrict the amount of public input in these things and only allow those who live in the areas where the hearing is being held to come and testify. Well, the problem with that is 6 hearings for the entire nation.
Right, right. If they're going to hold one in every metropolitan area in like the Nielsen top 300,
right,
maybe you can make such a restriction.
Right. So on one side, the National Association of Broadcasters was conducting what was effectively a 2-pronged lobbying strategy to, I believe, adulterate the public comment record on the media ownership proceeding to make it seem like there isn't such lopsided opposition to the idea of more consolidation. They mobilized broadcasters who mobilized their own constituencies to come out and talk. They all said the same damn thing. It was very, very interesting. And at the same time as they did that, they went on the attack against the public, saying we're hearing too much from them and we don't know if that's actually giving us an objective view of reality of the state of the media in the country. It was one of the most shocking things I think I have ever heard happen. And
it shows you, though, that Kevin Martin is a much smoother operator.
A savvy guy.
Much smoother operator than his predecessor, Michael Powell.
Absolutely. Michael Powell came out and basically, you know,
we don't want to hear from the public.
Yeah, you know, told everybody to kiss off. But Kevin Martin is doing all of this crazy underhanded stuff, and it just blew my mind. There's going to be 3 more of these public hearings officially hosted by the FCC. It'll be interesting to see what happens at hearing number 4. And the other interesting thing is groups like Free Press are also organizing supplementary hearings.
Right. So there's one coming up next week in Columbus, Ohio. And this one's interesting because for most of these unofficial hearings, these unofficial fora, the only commissioners from the FCC to show up have been the 2 Democrats, Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein. But this will be the first one that has an appearance from Republican
Robert McDowell,
who is proving to be a bit of a the closest that comes to a rogue on the FCC, in that he is already in his very short time on the FCC, less than a year, clashed with Kevin Martin, the chair, several times, most recently over the decision on the approval of the Bell South AT&T merger, where Robert McDowell kept himself out even after being begged by the FCC's staff attorney
right
to stay in, because he felt that there was a conflict of interest, because prior to being on the FCC, he worked for CompTel, which is itself a telecommunications lobbying association
for independent non-Bell company
for the competitors of AT&T and Bell South,
right?
Which gave the Democrats quite a bit additional muscle in guiding how that merger approval went down. What do you make of having McDowell, of McDowell participating in one of these fora?
Well, for the longest time, I do not believe that, and the thing you have to understand about how the FCC works is that the chairman controls the agenda, and the chairman is pretty much a de facto gatekeeper on what the FCC does. And so even though Kevin Martin has kind of been getting his head handed to him in a lot of ways by public interest constituencies, he could effectively ignore it because he still controlled the flow of policy. The way that the groundswell of public interest anger with the way that the FCC has handled the media ownership issue as it's growing, I don't think he can ignore that anymore. But he can't come out himself and basically turn around and say, I have had a eureka moment, a revelation, I now see things differently. I think what he's doing now is he is going to his Republican colleagues and saying, hey, we need to show that we can at least demonstrate symbolic accommodation to the public interest here. So, Robert, would you go join Jonathan and Michael in Columbus so that they can't keep saying that it's just a Democrat love fest, bash fest? Let's show that maybe the Republicans do care a little bit about the public interest. This is also interesting because it happens right on the heels of comments made by Deborah Taylor Tate, who is the third Republican member of the FCC. She recently announced in a speech, I don't remember to whom exactly, that she's very concerned about media diversity. She's very concerned about not only media diversity of content, but media diversity in an ownership sense. And she is going to work very hard to push the FCC in a direction where it gives more credence to the concept of diversity. Not necessarily what it means, right. Not necessarily
not the actuality
what, those,
of it.
What those metrics might actually be by which we define diversity. But let's at least pay some lip service to the concept of diversity, because it's obviously on the rabble's mind.
So what we see here then is a shift in tactic. So instead of the sort of flat out denial, which under Michael Powell, that, you know, ownership isn't important and it bears no relationship to local media responsibility and service, we're now seeing a shift to sort of saying, sure, there's some connections here, and taking over and say, yes, we do care about diversity, and maybe showing it a little bit better than the Michael Powell administration did, so they might perhaps capture one side of the middle.
Yeah.
Moving a little bit more to the middle, hoping to capture a little bit of that.
Or at least to say to those who might not be paying the closest attention right. to how policies are developed that we actually did something on the subject. Where the rubber meets the road is what happens in the research done by the FCC to justify its policies.
So maybe, I wonder if this is being shopped around on Capitol Hill, because Michael Powell, I mean, got his head handed to him by his own party during the ownership proceeding in 2003. It wasn't just Democrats and it wasn't just progressives, but it was conservatives. It was, you know, it was Trent Lott, for Pete's sake. I wonder if he's shopping around this tactic on Capitol Hill to make sure that even though the Republicans now are on the minority, he's not going to have not going to have them taking shots at him in addition to the Democrats, which he can sort of expect to
yes.
happen.
And it's also important to recognize where these trial balloons of possible expansion of thought from at least the Republican commissioners are coming from. Deborah Taylor Tate announced her newfound commitment to media diversity at the Media Institute, which is essentially a free market think tank funded by big media to advocate deregulatory policies. So she's floating these ideas in front of not the people who actually actually really care about media diversity, but at least in a friendly place where they're not going to boo her off the stage. What types of steps might this media diversity take? Well, one of the things that Tate suggested was something that Kevin Martin has actually suggested possibly doing, and that is allowing broadcasters, like digital television broadcasters, to lease some of their DTV spectrum to minorities to run their own programming. Now, notice there that we're still dealing with the ownership issue.
Oh, yeah.
We're not saying let's give underserved communities greater access to the media through ownership.
Or even
ownership.
Provide tax breaks for them to purchase them.
Let's let them share crop on spectrum owned by the dominant owners. And guess what? That's just another revenue source for them. It doesn't fundamentally change access and diversity on the airwaves.
It would be like your local UHF station saying, well, on midnight on Saturday night, instead of leasing that time to infomercials for for cleaning products, we're instead going to sell it to local NAACP or something.
Right. It still doesn't give the NAACP any sort of equitable access to the media environment. It just is another way of kind of pardon the pun, whitewashing this entire contentious deal. And the fact that, A, we saw what happened in Harrisburg with the stacking of the public testimony deck in such an egregious fashion, B, with Robert McDowell actually coming out and exposing himself to the public, and C, Tate now starting to actually invoke some of at least the buzzwords that are coming up in places like the media reform movement, at least shows that they're beginning to recognize that this is not going to be a steamroller of a process, a la Powell. This is something that they're going to have to work really hard to at least create the illusion that they've paid attention before they do something. And it's it's up to people like us to call them on that, to call BS on them. And so that's what we do.
And that is what we're doing here. Right. And they can hear more of that calling of BS there in Media Minutes.
Yes.
www.freepress.net/Media Minutes. It's once a week. It's 5 minutes digest form. And you're heard on community radios all over the country, right?
Yes. 50-something stations.
50-something. Way more than Media Geek, but it's also only 5 minutes.
Right. It's a lot easier to carve out 5 minutes than a half an hour.
Well, I should start sending hacksaws out with to constituent stations so I can cut it out and find some space here for the Media Geek. And, of course, for more coverage on pirate radio and spectrum issues, in addition to a great library what do you call those?
Audio collage,
but you've got, what do you call
it? Truthful translations. Political
that's
speech.
Right. That's DIYmedia.net. What are you up to on a Truthful Translations?
We're in kind of a lull. I haven't gotten too many contributions lately, but there's something like 468 of them online.
Okay.
It's more than a day's worth of listening if you tried to listen to every one of them back to back.
I think I would go crazy if I listened to them all back to back in one day.
Yeah, you're probably
lose
right.
My mind. That's all at DIYmedia.
474. Sorry.
474. Yeah. It's a good symmetrical number.
Yes.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate 969.org, and radiodriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.